When Peter Kropotkin, toward the end of his essay, Law and Authority, debunks the case made by power across the ages of class for the need for criminal law, the protection racket coterminous with its beginnings, they create the hardship, then they blame us for it and make us pay for it, big time. Quote from Peter Kropotkin. And I hopefully down the road we'll be able to continue posting more and more of those of his words. Quote, the third category of law still remains to be considered, that relating to the protection of the person and the detection and prevention of crime. This is the most important because most prejudice is attached to it. Because if law enjoys a certain amount of consideration, it's in consequence of the belief that this species of law is absolutely indispensable to the maintenance of security in our societies. These are laws developed from the nucleus of customs useful to human communities, which have been turned to account by rulers to sanctify their own domination. The authority of the chiefs of tribes, of rich families and towns, and of the king depended upon their judicial functions. And even down to the present day, whenever the necessity of government is spoken of, its function as supreme judge is the thing implied. Without a government, men would tear one another to pieces, argues the village orator. Or, quote, the ultimate end of all government is to secure 12 honest jurymen to every accused person, said Burke. Well, in spite of all the prejudices existing on this subject, it is quite time that anarchists should boldly declare this category of laws as useless and injurious as the preceding ones, unquote, from Law and Authority by Peter Kropotkin. One of the points he makes in this argument for challenging the legitimacy of criminal law, one of the points he makes is that those who argue that we need the state to protect, to provide the restraint of the barbarians, quote unquote, among us, always assume class ad infinitum, never admit into our view a picture of a society in which a man will receive a better education, in which the development of all his faculties and the possibility of exercising them will procure him so many enjoyments that he will not seek to poison them by remorse, unquote, from Kropotkin. The suppressed speech he is identifying, the picture of our new world founded on the opposite to class operating premises of non-coercion, mutual aid, decentralization, limitless time, freedom from necessity, no hierarchy, fully developing individualities, and the fulfillment of collective aims through our cooperative associations. This suppression of the discussion of the obvious alternative is a fraud located so centrally in the web of lies power spins to ensnare us that it may be the best way in to begin breaking the spell, to help ourselves out of this trance of class, begin the erosion of the belief in rule, hierarchy, and the supposed necessity of the forfeiture of our unique earth-given gifts. Among the myths exposed in our discussions of the alternative are the myth of progress, the notion that we are workers, i.e. servants, of a system of power, that we are the source of the problems that plague us, as opposed to hidden power, the global state statesman, that the state is out there instead of in us, that class is inevitable and so we must accept it, that the planning frame is the nation state, that the definitions we are handed are the ones we must take, freedom being life outside a prison cell, happiness a transitory condition that shifts with the mood we happen to be in, that leadership qualities are scarce commodities and decision-making must be held in few hands as a monopoly. The process of naming these qualities that we need to be healthy human beings, healthy living things, decentralization, freedom from necessity, limitless time, etc., in conjunction with the discussion of the dis-ease of the world we see around us, the world power has made, its wastefulness, destructiveness, contempt for us, irreverence, necessarily calls into question the motives of statesmen, exposes their opposite destination for us, the fact that they have an opposite vision. It's particularly urgent that we begin to claim this turf of the world we want, given the speed with which power is rushing to con us back into our boxes, at the very moment when more and more of us are determined to get out of them, and the scales have tipped toward our freedom. Power cannot provide the jobs globally, and we're beginning to see that other option called freedom, defined by us as freedom from necessity, and so freedom to begin to grow our gifts limitlessly, opening up before us, thanks to our intercommunications globally and the recognition of the power of the technology that we've created. It's up to us now to flesh out that picture of freedom with our brothers and sisters, continuously extend the results of those discussions to others, and begin organizing the transition, the key elements of which we've been discussing. It's important that we have a standard by which to judge the deals power advances to attempt to con us yet again. Kropotkin's point that the obvious alternative of health to oppose to the intentionally sown by power mistrust-laden shortages and divisions, the poison of imposed hardship infecting our relations, is never mentioned when power rolls out one of its deals, can be seen in all power's propaganda campaigns. One such was discussed in a recent East Bay Express. Quote, he, and they're referring to John Curl, a chronicler of cooperatives, he said he thinks we have reached a turning point in which the larger economic structures are no longer providing for people, and people are inventing their own structures. This has been the context both for a resurgence in cooperatives and the new platforms of the sharing economy. People have turned to both when the traditional economy fails to meet their needs. One example is the platform-based sharing model, which serves as an exchange connecting services with customers and doesn't collect a commission on each service, so there would be no markup. This kind of business has a small band of proponents across the country who have named it platform cooperativism. Earlier this year, Janelle Orsi, a sharing economy lawyer, wrote in an article for The Nation, quote, we have a choice. Keep using platforms that widen the wealth gap or build tech platforms as commons, unquote. And this article is written by Zoe Oha Tucker, The True Sharing Economy, in the November 4-10, 2015 East Bay Express. The power guys who orchestrate campaigns like this intend for us to think as we read it. So, this is a structural shift we're seeing, but it could be a good thing, potentially, if we stretch our skills and use our gifts. Unlike with that 9-to-5 oppressiveness, we could, by default, make a whole new economy, even a new world, perhaps, in the wake of capitalism's waning influence, just by everyone seizing the opening, venturing into the gap, and growing into it. Well, what's wrong with that? How do we reply without our vision in mind, our global vision, in which we grow our gifts limitlessly, in which we are free from necessity, in which we help each other with through mutual aid and cooperation, in which we are the decision makers, and the fully developing individuality is the basic unit of political organization.